call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Representative Burkle, have you looked over the minutes?
I have. I'd like to move the minutes.
Representative Burkle moves the minutes for January 17th, 2023. Any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Before we get started, I do want to recognize a celebrity in the audience. Former Representative Mike Beard is here, and just good to see you again, Representative Beard. We have an agenda today where we're going to have an overview from the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. That should take till about 3:30, and then we have a couple of bills that will be going forward. Members and the public and the agencies this morning, I did send a letter to the agencies just informing them of what our committee deadlines are, that if there are amendments, if they have suggestions for members' bills, that they connect with the members ahead of time, and that they we can't get amendments on the schedule with 15 minutes left without working with the authors of the bills. So just encourage, so Tuesday we will be back in committee again, and so the committee deadline for amendments for Tuesday would be Mr. Strohmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Monday at 1 p.m.
For Tuesday's committee, Monday at 1 p.m. would be the deadline for amendments. So just to be clear. We have with us first Mark Murphy, the Conservation Corps of Minnesota. Welcome. Good to see you again. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. My name is Mark Murphy. I'm the Executive Director of the Conservation Corps of Minnesota and Iowa, and it is a pleasure to be here. It's great to be back in person. Thank you for inviting me today. I'm going to go through a few slides. It's a pleasure to meet many new or see many new members on your committee, and think it would be useful to give an overview of who we are. We have a long relationship with the legislature, a long relationship with the DNR going back, and I want to make sure you know who we are. This is, I think, the fourth or fifth time I've been on the committee. It was electronic before the Zoom, so it's great to be back, and we're a little rusty, I think, in doing some of these kinds of presentations. I wanted to start with who we are. We are 501c3. Some people think we're part of state government, but we actually were spun off, if you will, back in 2003, and you'll see that some more. Our mission, what we really do, is engage young people, youth, and young adults through the AmeriCorps program to do. Oh, thank you. Assistance. We engage young people to do natural resource work, training, leadership development. We have five core values built around safety, around equity, around community, around service. Our history, in case you're not familiar with this, dates back, and some people will think, oh, I get it, you're the CCC, the Fifth Civilian Conservation Corps of 80, 85 years ago. And that's really where our roots come from. And in the early days, there were different groups that worked inside the DNR, and the DNR established a Minnesota Conservation Corps in the early 80s to work with youth and young people to do exactly training and such, and carried that program for a long time. They created a summer youth corps that we still run today, but it was started back in the very early 80s. It is run from St. Croix Park at St. John's Landing. In 1999, a committee was formed, the Friends of the Conservation Corps, to start looking at turning the organization into a nonprofit and to leverage the AmeriCorps program that was created by President George Bush and Bill Clinton. And in 2003, we formally became a 501c3 and began operating separately. I think, what is AmeriCorps? Some people know what it is. I like to maybe in very short, truncated language say it's like the Peace Corps for domestic use. It is a very large program. It's a national program. There's something like 75,000 AmeriCorps members that are engaged every year in 25,000 locations around the country doing everything from Reading Corps to Math Corps to Public Health Corps, and then there's Conservation Corps. And we have been working with AmeriCorps consistently since our very beginning. What we do, I've mentioned before, but really we use our programs and our service working with agencies, federal, state, and local agencies to do, improve access to outdoors, broadly thinking, but it's trails, it's campgrounds, it's improving parks, it's improving shorelines, waterways, it's helping do invasive removal and help monitor habitat, and it's responding to natural disasters. When we aren't working in parks and such, or when we are, when fire strikes up north, or when there's floods in Rainy Lake, they call on the Corps for us to bring young people in to help do sandbagging or help work maybe not so much on the front lines, but in the back lines in the fire to support the crews that are working there professionally. Our programs, we have six or eight programs that you may know or be familiar with. Some people know of us because you see crews out on trails with the yellow hats on, working and building trails, building park boardwalks, building bridges. Those are our field crews. They're 18 to 25 year olds, generally speaking. They're AmeriCorps. They're in our program for 11 months or 9 months or 6 months, depending on the length of their term. They get a stipend. They get an education award. We work around the state. We have offices in Duluth and Rochester and satellites in Mankato and Bemidji and elsewhere where we put these crews into the field. Again, they work with state agencies, some federal agencies, significantly with DNR, Bowser, SWCDs, local park districts and the like. In the last couple of years, we've done some innovation. We've added and are launching sort of a pilot or the beginnings of a Veterans Conservation Corps, which takes the ages up a little bit. We also have been testing an Iowa Monarch program that we're testing in Iowa while working with the Monarch Joint Ventures nonprofit here in Minnesota. And we have just recently launched with the Fond du Lac Tribe an indigenous crew that's funded with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. We have individual placements where we put individuals, not crews, into individual offices around the state, whether it's DNR or, again, National Park Service, or it might be a state agency or a park location. Those are more like internships. Again, they're placed for 11 months or 9 months or 6 months, depending on their current term. We have an innovative new program that we started that's in year four, the IDEC program, which is aimed at increasing diversity in environmental careers. It is a partnership with MPCA, DNR, and Bowser to take a cohort of individuals each year, around 15, and to give them mentorships and internships to encourage them to join the natural resources as a career. We do work with youth. We work with Youth Outdoors Program, which is a metro-based program in the spring and the fall that takes kids from community centers and gives them similar experiences in crews. It's obviously lighter than perhaps the field crew for the adults, but it's the same concept. We work with the ICANN program that many of you probably know of through DNR that introduces families and young people to recreational outdoor activities in the summer. And then we have the Summer Youth Group, which I mentioned before, which has been around almost 40 years, that is based in the camp. We have several sources of revenue. I've mentioned some here. We come to the committee and are very thankful for the committee and the role that you play supporting a state appropriation that we get from you that comes through the DNR budget. We get monies that are dedicated to the DNR and dedicated to Bowser through Legacy and the Clean Water Fund to work with us through joint powers. So we get contracts from them and our crews provide services to those projects and those agencies. We get money from AmeriCorps, which is the base that matches for every AmeriCorps member we recruit. We get a base grant that then we match with resources from the state legislature or the agencies we work with. We get a small amount of contributed capital and revenue in that we raise some money. We get some money from foundations and corporations, but it's a very small amount. It's 2 to 3% a year. It is, though, very important to us to do the innovation to support some of the hard costs that the state dollars will not support. I provided, these pie charts for financial summary. This is 21 because 22 is still being tied down, as you would say. You can see that I tend to say we get about 15% in federal grants, mostly AmeriCorps, 14-15%. Our state grants and appropriations is that 10-13% we get direct through the state appropriation, our contributions, and our partner support. We have an operating budget that's been floating around 8.5 to 9.5 million the last 3 or 4 years, and it's sort of stuck there in some ways. And mostly because a lot of our revenue is driven by how many people we recruit. And I'll be talking about it in a minute. But, when you are dependent on the number of people you recruit, young people who are now in a market that has changed dramatically in the last few years, the fewer widgets you bring in the door, the fewer, dollars you can generate with grant matching dollars from federal sources, and the work that you can do that's basically paid for by these contracts that we work with our agency partners. Talk about that some more. However, we still do a lot of work. We work with, 400 to 500 young people every biennium or more. That number is down some from where we were in the mid-teens. We still work with, 200 or 300 youth. We have this new fellows program that has introduced a whole new cohort of young people to the natural resources. We plant thousands of trees. We work on thousands of miles of trails. And we work on thousands of acres removing invasive species and the like. Bright spots and current spots. Bright spots are you talk to any one of our core members and they're going to say, this was a great experience. I got exposure. I got experience. I met some contacts. And I'm getting a job at the end of this internship. Or I now know what I want to do in career service. I was just in an opening orientation session for core members yesterday, asked them this question, I got that same answer. I was in an ending session last December with a crew that was matriculating out, asked a question, got the same answer. It is a valued hands-on experience that gives people real life experience to try out the natural resources. And if you talk to anybody at DNR or Bowser and these agencies, they are hungry to bring new people in to those jobs, and they really look to us to try to generate that kind of interest and that kind of workforce. I already mentioned the thousands of hours and miles that we provide in terms of improving and maintaining public natural resource assets. The disaster response is really important, and I would say that we are really unique among the cores around the country, of which there are 140, in that we have this unique relationship with the DNR and other state agencies that really it's almost a parent or sister relationship. On the more sticky side, it's that we have residual and persistent problems from the pandemic, from the economy, from the changes in the workforce, the reducing populations of the workforce that we're trying to attract, growing mental health trends among young people that we work with that cause problems in our crews that we have to manage. A lot of sticky spots from all the noise of the last couple of years that we've been challenged with as a nonprofit, as private sector, as public sector. The business model for AmeriCorps is a bit outdated because it pays a stipend, it has a ceiling on a stipend, and we go to young people and say, hey, come work for us and perform community service, we're going to give you, $16,000 for the year, or $1,600 a month, and you get a $6,000 scholarship at the end. And you get a lot of people that say, that is enough. That amounts to about $12 an hour plus the scholarship, and I can go do better at McDonald's. I can go do better at Walmart, and it makes it very difficult. and they put a ceiling on how much we can pay. Housing is a big deal, getting people to work for 11 months. Housing is a big deal, especially in rural areas, but also in the metro. So we're really pushing up against that. The rising cost. We saw significant rising costs in the last couple of years because in order to respond to the Great Resignation, in order to hire young people, in order to bring and keep our professionals on to work with young people, we have to raise wages. And we have to hire the vehicles or rent the vehicles. Everything is more expensive. Fuel, everything is more expensive. So we've really been backed up against those pressures. And then demographics. Demographics are changing in Minnesota. Young people, there are fewer. If you talk to any universities or colleges, they talk about the decline in enrollment. I mean, there's just fewer young people to go around. So recruitment has been a major focus for us. So our strategic priorities that we shared 5 years ago are still in some ways the three on the bottom there in green: renewing our programming to be relevant, attracting and retaining a diverse pool of applicants, and building new kinds of partnerships are as relevant as ever, and this is where we're working. I would say, one, we need the resources to have the staff in play that can work with, recruit, and retain the people that we need to attract to these jobs. Two, housing being a challenge, we've worked with the DNR, we've worked to look at housing solutions like bunkhouses that we could use in the summer and so forth. But we've talked with some about the idea of housing vouchers for AmeriCorps broadly, for the thousands of AmeriCorps members that serve in the state, and looking at a program like that. We benefit greatly from the funds that the legislature, the legacy fund, gives to our agency, but the general appropriation that we provide is really very important operating support that we rely on, and is been spent three times over at the beginning of the year with all these increased costs. So we're here to continue to thank you for your support, open for looking at new ways you can support us, build the infrastructure that we need to attract this workforce to come work with our organization. And I would be remiss if I didn't go to this last slide and just highlight that the justice, equity, diversity, inclusion, we call it JEDI, is really important to our young people today. It's really important to the partners that we work with. It's important to the new partnerships we have. And it has been a major focus of how we create our job positions, how we approach young people, how we enable and empower them to lead crews, and how we change the culture of the organization we have. And with that, I will go to questions.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Director Murphy, for your presentation. So understanding some of the demographics barriers that you're facing, I'm just curious, through the IDEC program, do you track or have data on how many of those fellows that went through the program actually continue on in an environmental career?
Yeah, that's a great, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Murphy.
That's a great question. There's been three cohorts, and we added a fourth cohort with some additional money that we got last year. Well, I'll tell you right now, in real time, two of those members that matriculated last year, which was the first cohort, came over and did have taken on individual placements in our firm so they could get exposure, one working for DNR, one that tried to work for DNR and instead ended up working for a Monarch Joint Ventures, a local nonprofit. There are others in the cohorts. We've only been through one full cohort, so we have cohort 2, 3, and 4 that are geared up. But that first cohort, there were some that left the state to take on graduate school and go on to other careers in science and STEM. And there are some that have stayed in the state. I think one has become a conservation officer. I think one has gone to work for a forestry group. I'm thinking out loud. So we are tracking that data, but you know, each cohort's only about 15 people, so it's not hard data for us to track.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Murphy, Is there any overlap among the AmeriCorps members that you have with the fellows in the IDAC program? It seems here you're saying that for IDAC, it's only students in college. And my understanding is that majority, or if not all, AmeriCorps members are postgraduate. Is that correct?
No. No, no, not at all. There are, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Murphy.
No. We have 18 and 25-year-olds. So we have AmeriCorps members that come in who maybe have just graduated from high school. Some of them come out of our youth program and say, I want to do this. We also have AmeriCorps members who come out of college and say, I don't know what to do, or I want to get a way to get hands-on experience so I can get a job in the resource sector. So it's across the board. I would say it's a broad mix. Those who are doing crew work probably tend to be that mix of either in college, just after high school. The ones that are individual placements tend to be ones that are further in their college careers. With IDEC, we're working with young people who are maybe 2 years in, or they're in a community college, they're getting exposure. They come out, they get a mentorship, they get an internship, and they may be, you know, ready for a job in the DNR, or they may need more exposure, access, experience. So we are actually looking at ways that we can maybe bridge and find synergies, if you will, between the two programs so that we assure more success in those IDEC students being given avenues to try out natural resource jobs.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to close the comment, I really appreciate the information you're providing, and it is my hope that as the Conversation Corps continues to work with the DNR, MPCA, and Bowser, that quite possibly there's a pathway into employment with our state agencies, knowing that a lot of our public servants there are some of the top individuals that we have in the state. And so really appreciate seeing the investment that we make as a committee here in Legacy and overall actually contributing to some of the success that we see within our state agencies. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Heintzman and then Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Murphy, I appreciate the presentation today. Good to get some overview of what you all do. I'll just start by saying that I've had a lot of similar conversations with a number of folks over the years that have had a positive experience working with the Corps and so on, and that's good. I will just quickly go to one of the pages in the presentation, our programs, Youth Outdoors, I Can Camp and Paddle, Summer Youth Corps. And you probably already know where I'm going with this. I've worked with the LCCMR, and I think, if I recall, this is something that you guys already cover, but background checks for those that work with children. And wanted to just confirm that that's something that's taking place.
Oh, absolutely.
Mr. Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely. Background checks are required for all AmeriCorps. They're required for all of our staff. So absolutely done.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I thought that was the case, and I'm glad to hear that. There are places where we're going to need to work make sure that we're up to speed on that with those folks that are receiving public support, and make sure background checks are in place. So thank you for that answer, and thank you again for your presentation.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am wondering, Director Murphy, so I ran a nonprofit and we did some restoration work, and I know some of our contracts with the state, there was a clause in there about how we needed to sort of put the work out to MCC first. Can you clarify that process a little bit for me, please?
Mr.
Murphy.
Well, I've been here 4 years, and I would say we're very grateful because for the first 12 years of the Corps, the executive director was a former state senator named Len Price. And when the Corps was coming out of the DNR, and Len Price was the head of LCCMR, joint powers arrangement was created with our relationship with the DNR. And so that means that the DNR, two things. One is the DNR gets funding where they come to us specifically to work on certain projects with certain funding. And then the other one is state agencies like, LCBO projects and the like, we're required to come ask us if we want to bid on those projects. And we get those bids. We look at them many times. But frankly, in the last couple of years, because of our shortage of people, we aren't able to bid on them because of so much other work coming from other demanding partners as well. But that's how it has worked. It's a benefit that we don't take lightly.
Members, any other questions? You mentioned recruiting, and would it be possible for you to get to all the committee members just the job notices? We all have emails and social media and can get the information out to our districts, find ways of connecting and getting folks to apply for any of the programs. I do have a question. I think we asked 2 years ago when we were in Zoom land that, you know, if you're having difficulty with hiring people because the wages are low, if we provide additional dollars, would you raise the wages or would you expand program?
Yeah. So we have raised wages off of our current budget amounts last 2 years, last 3 years, really. We have also added a housing stipend. So we have added things in. It's not enough. It's, you know, chipping away at a steep hill. AmeriCorps has also increased lightly some resources for us to do that. It's still not enough. If you were to increase support to us, they would go towards supporting costs that allow us to raise wages, raise more third-party funds to raise wages, look for solutions to the housing, some of the housing supports, let's say. And we would probably look at program development that gives us more latitude to attract candidates to come in and maybe do our programs for 6 months, not 9 months or 12 months, you know. So we would probably use that money to address the recruiting barriers, per se. We have spent more on recruiting the last 3 years by investing in social media, by posting, by using job sites and all that, and we will continue to do that. But we have to address those barriers that are still serving as obstacles to attract people to come try the natural resources.
And one-time money or ongoing money, you'd be able to use both?
I would say we can't use it all, no. One-time money would be great because it's a particularly critical time right now given the job market. Long-time or sustainable money is obviously what nonprofits need to bear. One of the things that I think has made the Conservation Corps be able to provide contiguous engagement with our big agency partners is that we know that we have a stable base of support from the legislature to do this work. We're very seasonal in our work, and so knowing that, you know, these funds are coming from you really allow us the stability to keep our eye on the prize in terms of the cycle and seasons that we work.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy.
Thank you.
To work with you.
I appreciate the time and welcome any questions from you if you want to send them to me via contact or Peter. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have House File 234, Representative Vang. Representative Vang, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I will move that House File 234 be laid over.
Thank you, Representative Vang. To your bill.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, and to members of the committee. I've come before the committee once again on an issue we've been talking about for 4 years. It is also one of my more popular bills, and that is saving Minnesota's native turtles. This bill essentially limits the taking and harvesting of turtles. As you will hear from my testimony, why this is an important issue for us to act now to ensure our turtle population is sustainable. Majority of turtles harvested in Minnesota are painted turtle, snapping turtle, and spiny softshell. Minnesota is pretty much an island that is still pretty laxed on harvesting of turtles. A majority of the neighboring Midwest states have disallowed commercial harvesting of turtles due to turtle population concerns. What we have seen from the DNR's latest data is that harvests approximately doubled from 2020 to 2021 for all three species of turtle that were harvestable. Over 10,000 painted turtles were commercially harvested in 2021 alone. And despite the decline in licenses over the years, it doesn't mean there was a decline in harvesting. And thus, this bill will help tackle the most negative impact on our turtle population. Just a brief overview of the bill. Section 1 eliminates the turtle seller's license and modifies a turtle license to be a recreational license to take and transport and possess turtles for personal use. Section 2 requires a turtle license to take turtles in addition to a resident angling license. Section 3 provides exemptions from getting a turtle recreational license when buying a turtle at a retail turtle races and aquatic farm licenses with a turtle endorsement or a private fish hatchery license with a turtle endorsement. Section 4 specifies that prohibited methods of taking turtles. Section 5 limits how many native turtles can be taken by an individual. Section 6 deals with a non-renewal or transfer of a turtle seller license. And then Section 7 repeals statutes relating to turtle seller and apprentices license and uses of traps and equipment, which will be obsolete if this bill were to be enacted. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will yield my time to my testifier.
Thank you, Representative Ang. First testifier, John Moriarty. Welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Henson. My name is John Moriarty. I am here testifying today as an individual, but I got to put on my work hat to give Director Murphy a plug. We are a heavy user of CCM. We have three crews that we use full time. We actually get some of their crew money through the state CPL grants, and we also use it through our regular budget. But we've had crews for probably 20 years since they've been around. So it's a really important program, and it lets us do a lot of good work. So take my work hat off and put my personal hat back on. Once again, my name is John Moriarty. I live in Shoreview. I've been a long-term resident of Minnesota, and I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 234 to eliminate commercial turtle harvesting. I've been involved with turtle conservation and research in Minnesota for over 35 years. And have seen turtle populations decrease at a number of the sites that I've worked on over the years. Turtle populations in Minnesota, the U.S., and in the world have been under threat from habitat loss, pollution, and human use, which includes pets, but mainly food sources. In commercial harvests, especially snapping turtles, targeting female adult turtles is a big problem because the females are the crucial part to maintaining a population. And when you take the large females, you lose the recruitment in the future. It's kind of like you let the big female walleyes go, and that way you have walleyes in the future. And there's a lot more information. There was a written testimony that was submitted, and you have some detailed information from Mr. Chris Smith that gives you some more numbers on that. The initial efforts to eliminate commercial turtle harvesting started 20 years ago when we were here at the committees, and we actually got new licenses limited. It allowed commercial turtle harvesters to renew their licenses, and then there was a couple variations they could pass it on to their heirs if they wanted to continue. So we kept it from growing as far as the number of trappers, but as Representative Vang said, the number of turtles per trapper has been increasing, and that's through outside buyers from outside of Minnesota. So eliminating this process has been in discussion for much more than 4 years. But I'm glad it has come back to the surface, and hopefully this year that it could be passed and commercial harvesting will come to an end. So thank you.
Next, why don't we take any questions for Mr. Moriarty? Okay. Next testifier, Heidi Wolf, Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Welcome to the committee and state your name.
My name is Heidi Wolf, and I am the section manager for the Environmental Management and Protection section. Mr. Chair, committee members, we'd like to thank Representative Vang for working with us on this bill and take any questions if anyone has any for us.
Members, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Vang, I just have a quick question for you. Have there been recent studies on Minnesota's turtle populations and trends over time?
I believe, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Schultz, for your question. I believe the DNR has been tracking, that has the data and perhaps done studies on the harvesting of turtles.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my understanding is there is numbers on that. I don't have them handy. We can certainly get that to you, but we do support the bill, and as Mr. Moriarty said, we were interested in this for the past 20 years. Unfortunately, the measures taken aren't actually implementing decline in the numbers of turtles taken, and due to that issue of sexual maturity taking a long time, they're having small broods and those being really susceptible to nest predation, it's definitely an issue.
Representative Schultz, I think there's some graphs here on this Minnesota Herpetological Society inside. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will further review the information provided, and I appreciate your guidance in directing us to that information. Would certainly want to understand the current trends to make sure that we're enacting policy that is well representative of the you know, the environment here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Vang, I'm looking at the history here and the states that are on the map. So it's just us in Iowa that are in the upper Midwest, and then it's all, I mean, the bulk of the country does not have commercial harvest.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And even in Iowa, they have much more restricted laws than Minnesota in terms of commercial harvesting.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. And we have been over this bill a number of times through the years, Representative Vang, and I'm going to sound like a repeating record at this point, but I would appreciate, for the committee's benefit and anyone watching at home, in Nisswa, for example, where we have the world-famous turtle races, how would this bill, if it would have an impact, potentially affect the turtle races in my town, in my district?
Yeah. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Heisman, for the question. So this bill would not affect. We do allow an exception for turtle racing in Minnesota. So this bill would not affect your community in terms of turtle races.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we've had that clarification before, but it's a brand new year and a brand new bill number, so the question is here again. Thank you.
Any other questions? Is there any other testimony? Any other members of the audience would like to testify? Just a little bit on process. So Representative Vang moved to lay the bill over. We did receive some suggested amendments from the DNR. We are going to lay the bill over for Tuesday and then have it first on the agenda. So this is your opportunity for testimony or questions, because we will post those amendments and then take the amendments up in the bill. But our intent here is we have some time. If people have the questions, today would be the time for questions and testimony. And then we would take action right away on Tuesday with the bill. Any other questions? And there was testimony in the packet, correct? Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a guide, I deal with turtles all the time, snapping turtles. And I'm curious about the possession limits. Again, I don't know who would want to, but there's three snapping turtles allowed, three painted turtles. Is that to, if a little kid gets a turtle and brings it and tries to make it live and then releases it, they won't be violating any law like that? Or what is, that's what I'm more curious and concerned about, you know, because everybody's, where I'm from, everyone's always tries to save the turtle, you know. And so, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for your question. So, as you heard from Mr. Chair, there will be some suggested amendments coming up soon Tuesday, so that could help clarify some of your concerns there, too. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any closing comments?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, committee, for your support. Let's save the turtles. And, Mr. Chair, I will renew my motion for House File 234 to be laid over.
Bill's laid over until Tuesday. Next up, thank you, Representative Burkle. House File 40, Representative Burkle, portable stands permanently allowed on wildlife management areas. I think we've heard this one before.
It's been a while. Thank you, Chair Hansen and members. I'm assuming, Chair, that we're going to lay this over as well, right? Correct?
Will you move that House File 40 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill?
Okay. I'll make that motion to move House File 40 to be laid over. So a little context. In 2017, former Representative Dan Fabian championed a pilot program to allow portable stands to be left in wildlife management areas in the northwest corner of Minnesota, pretty much all of my district 1A. The bill makes the pilot program, it allows portable stands to remain permanent. Proposed legislation would allow these deer hunting stands to stay in wildlife management areas just to allow safer hunting versus having to erect and then remove a stand from state lands each and every evening or every day. The bill was non-controversial in the past, has been a non-issue as far as conservation enforcement, and has the full support of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association and the DNR. With that, I'll make this short and sweet. I do have a testifier, Mr. Eric Simonson from the Deer Hunters, and Pat Rivers is here from the DNR to answer any questions.
Mr. Simonson. Welcome, and if you could state your name and who you're with for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric Simonson, a lobbyist with Flaherty and Hood. In this case, I'm representing the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, a nonprofit group formally officially formed in 1980, an association now reaching 20,000 members created by hunters and for hunters. For the past 40-plus years, the MDHA has been building a hunting and conservation legacy through habitat education and advocacy. We want to express our gratitude to Representative Burkle for bringing forward House File 40 and want to express our support of the bill to the committee. As many of you know, portable stands have become increasingly popular with hunters, and reinstating paragraph B in this bill will be much appreciated by hunters within these specific wildlife management areas. Again, want to express my thank you to you, Chair Hansen, and the committee for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 40. We are always happy to be a resource around issues important to deer hunters.
Members, any questions? Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Burkle, for bringing this forward. Have any other hunting groups expressed any position on this either way? I'm specifically asking about like backcountry hunters or anglers or some of our other organizations that use our public lands for hunting and fishing.
I'm not aware of any in particular. Oh, sorry, Chair Anson. Representative Jordan, no, I'm not aware of any, but the DNR might be able to answer that question with a little more clarity if you want to ask Pat Rivers.
Mr. Rivers? Welcome to the committee, and did you hear the question from Representative Jordan?
I can.
Representative Jordan.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rivers, I'm wondering if any other hunting or angling groups or other public land advocates have expressed any any opinions about this bill.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Pat Rivers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Fish and Wildlife at the Minnesota DNR. Over the last several years, we've not heard any concerns about this in the northwest part of the state.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. And I think that someone might have made a terrible mistake before presenting this bill, Mr. Chair. I don't believe any treats were offered to the committee.
Oh, well.
Is that a rule?
Are you calling a roll call, Mr.?
We've been free.
Mr. Chair, I've been a benefit of COVID. So I haven't had to, I don't know the rules. I will make it up to you next time.
Would you like closing comments, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to remind everyone, this pilot was very successful, and people in my area really would like to see this made permanent, and it simply removes the sunset clause. So I'd like to renew my motion to lay House File 40 over.
Before we do that, is there anybody else in the audience? Oh, Representative Schultz.
Oh.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Burkle, and to the DNR staff in the room, you know, I grew up on land directly surrounded on multiple fronts by state-managed wildlife areas, and I still hunt on that same area today. And if you want to visit and see the buck that I took from that, you're welcome in SOB 201. But certainly we have a strong hunting heritage here in Minnesota, and I just wonder if this is a project and an idea that can be further implemented statewide, and what feedback there may be to that idea.
Representative Burkle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Schultz, I have been approached by many members saying they'd like to see this statewide. I think right now, given the success of the pilot program in northwest Minnesota, I think that's a good starting point. We can maybe springboard from that. But there is interest in that.
2 years in the legislature, you know, there's this year and next year. Any other questions? Any other testimony? Representative Burkle renews his motion that House File 40 be laid over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. The bill is laid over. I think I gave the kind of a roadmap for next week. We anticipate, so we'll do Representative Vang's bill right away on Tuesday. We expect several bills and trying to fit more in next week. So bills are starting to come now and getting assigned to the committee. We are adjourned.